Today's episode of Rob Has a Podcast is sponsored by SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time, and it's tough to find the best deal for that game or the show you want to go to, but SeatGeek is different, and they've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. I'm on SeatGeek right now, taking a look at what's available to me. So many different musical acts that I could go see. Normally, I'd say I want to go see my Mets, but nobody wants to watch the Mets right now. I'm taking a look at this, and I see, oh, what's this? Juicy J right here near me to go check out? Or maybe I could go see Selena Gomez, perhaps, or even Chicago at the Hollywood Bowl. I'm going to be in Chicago soon. I can check it all out on SeatGeek. It's the first place that I go to take a look at concert tickets or tickets to a sporting event. They've got the app on the phone. It couldn't be easier to use. They do the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites, ensuring that you get the best possible deal. And they do all the work and saving you time and money. And best of all, our listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So to get your $20 rebate on tickets on SeatGeek, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code and use the promo code Rob. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code Rob today to get your $20 rebate from SeatGeek. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with some special coverage today. We're talking about a new series which just launched on the YouTube Red, which has some familiar faces that you may have seen before if you've been following Rob's podcast and reality TV over the last couple of years. And to talk about the new show, Escape the Night, here is our good friend who 3 years ago hosted a podcast about the TV show Whodunit with me. Welcome back, Kurt Clark.
Thank you, Rob. Hey there. How's it going?
Yes. How are you?
I am great. Finally, a show that actually has a curse as an integral part of the plot.
Yeah, good. Well done. The Clark curse may be in full effect on Escape the Night, which combines one of Kurt's great loves in life, escape the room puzzles, and a 1920s type murder mystery a la a whodunit or the movie Clue. And it combines YouTube stars such as the Amazing Race's Joey Graceffa from Amazing Race 22 and Amazing Race 24. He is the person who has organized all this. And part one of, what is this, like a 10-part series is up now on YouTube. But caveat, you need to be a subscriber to YouTube Red to see past the first episode. So we're just going to talk about the first episode and whether or not it may or may not be worth your time.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a way you could potentially game the system a little bit down the road, because I do believe, I looked into it myself, that you do get a free month's trial of YouTube Red. And if you do cancel before the end of that first month, you do not get charged the first $9.99. But it's one of those things, if you find that you're enjoying it, it's like $10 to finish the whole series and then just cancel it. And let's talk about what this is all about.
Good. So happy to have Kurt back here on the podcast. I don't even remember the last thing that we podcast about, so always a pleasure to talk to you. Also, quick hat tip to Andy Denhart, who from Reality Blurred, who really put this first on our radar. Kurt messaged me and said, hey, should we talk about this? Yeah. And now here we are.
And also, actually, a shout out to Mark Solero, who actually forwarded the Reality Blurred link to me. So thank you, Don's Bread, for knowing what I'm into and making it known.
Yeah. Okay. So, Kurt, can you believe it's been 3 years since the Whodunit podcast?
It's sad that it has not returned. That's the thing that hurts me the most, that there hasn't been a Whodunit 2. Yeah. So that's why I think I kind of glommed onto this. It was like, it's like, this is the closest I'm going to probably get to a whodunit too for a long time.
Now, we've had a lot of new listeners come on to the podcast since that time back in 2013 when we watched Whodunit. Could you set up what Whodunit was and maybe why people may want to try and find that if it does exist somewhere online?
Sure. So Whodunit was a murder mystery where several strangers were brought together in a mansion with one of the best hosts ever, Giles the Butler.
Yes.
Yes. If you ever hear Rob refer to a character, a player named Lindsay on any show, and you're wondering why he says it with such a strange tone, it's because of Whodunit.
Lindsay.
Lindsay, yeah. In Whodunit, the contestants were bumped off in a series of really gruesome deaths, and they had to figure out how exactly the previous person died, and the person who was furthest away from uncovering the truth, a little bit like the mole in terms of the who knew the least, the person who uncovered the mystery in the worst possible way ended up being the next victim, was the victim of the next murder, and was the next case that the remaining contestants had to solve. It ended up being more of a how done it than a who done it, but it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun covering it, and it was a big cheese fest, but it was also very enjoyable.
And maybe we might do some Whodunit Season 1 spoilers, so if you are especially spoiler-averse, I did a quick search on YouTube. It looks like someone has posted all of the episodes, so they do exist, not too hard to find if you want to go back and check out Whodunit. So that Whodunit, as Kurt set up, was a game show where the people were trying to figure out who the killer was and how they committed these murders every single week. And that was sort of that was what the game was about. Here, Escape the Night is different, which really sort of, I thought, blurs the line between a scripted show and that there is a game that's going on. And to me, that while I am very excited about this idea, the premise, I still don't know if I exactly understand what is being set up here on this show, Kurt.
The story premise is set up in excruciatingly detailed amounts at the very beginning, which I thought was actually kind of on the background and the story. In terms of the actual gameplay, I think we get most of it in the last 2 minutes of the pilot episode that you can watch for free on YouTube, Red. It is a little bit unclear. I don't get the sense that the gameplay action we saw in this first episode is necessarily what's to follow. We can talk a little bit about what maybe to follow down the road. And I agree with you. I wasn't sure to what extent, which elements of what we saw during this episode the quote-unquote cast was in on. Like, how much does Joey, as the person who kind of had set this up, know about the puzzles and know about the solutions and know about what's going on? Or did he kind of hire a team to do that and he just gathered the people? So lots of questions on how this actually came together.
Yeah, and from what I understand, that Joey Graceffa, he did put this all together, but he doesn't actually know what's going on. So he's actually does not know the answers to the puzzles, and he's also one of the contestants, I believe, in the game, whereas there is some unknown production entity that's putting things on, and he's being surprised from what he has said with the other participants,
which makes sense. But we'll talk to it as we get through the kind of the different stages of how this first episode played out. But there were certain points, say where certain people are going off to explore certain places, where you don't really know if. Is that staged? Did they decide to do that on their own? Like, how much is this a freewheeling murder mystery night where you can truly do whatever you want to, and how much of it is truly structured around a game?
Yeah, it's very unclear. So let's just, for people, because I don't know if everybody, I really doubt everybody will have watched this by the time they are listening to us talk about it. So let's just take a step back, Kurt, and let's just sort of set up the premise and who's involved and why they end up at this mansion.
Yes, and it all kicks off, I guess it seems like Joey has been having again, within the context of the story, he's been having this series of very intense dreams about this house. And then he suddenly receives a letter that says that this house is his. And he kind of describes this as this is kind of a fantasy that has had life breathed into it. He can't get sleep unless he invites people to this house for a party for some nefarious purpose that he's not really necessarily sure what's going on.
Right. The intro, not unlike the quest, where it's like, okay, here is some sort of odd setup to get to this point. No mention of where Megan from The Amazing Race is either.
That wasn't her as the maid?
I don't think so.
No.
I don't know. That we don't know. Okay, so, all right, Joey ends up, he has this house, and he has to invite all of his YouTube friends there to the party. And the other YouTubers involved in this, of the people that, you know, all have big followings, but the other person here, who you may know from a million other things, including appearances on Robinson Podcast, is Shane Dawson, who we've talked to over the last couple of years. Big, Big Brother fan, as well as a fan of the other reality shows. And so he's there as well. So again, we are going to be spoiling the first episode here. I think that's fair to say. So this is your official spoiler warning. If you don't want to know what's going to happen in that first episode, unfortunately, Shane Dawson will not make it through the first episode of Escape the Night.
He is our Sherry the cheerleader
of
Escape the Night.
Shane!
Exactly. Yeah, but it's interesting. And there's these complex rules. So he invites all, Joey invites all of his friends, but several rules. You have to be dressed in the clothing of that era, and your attitude must reflect the time period of the era for you to be able to approach the house or even to be able to see it and be a part of it.
Which is fine, because it's like the sort of the setup is, if you were going to go to some murder mystery party, you get a character that you're playing and that's who you are for the night. So, okay, fine. I'm with it, the show. I'm following along on the premise. Like, I have no issues with the logic of, hey, why is so-and-so have to pretend to be a reporter?
Right. And there's a time traveling limo that gets them there. Let's remember that.
Well, you know, let's suspend your disbelief.
It's the 1920s.
It's fun. That's all fun to me.
Yeah. I think I'm just trying to count down about, 12 or 13 different guests. Each one has a different character that Joey had assigned them. He even talks in the show about the joy of assigned. Like, he enjoyed that part, and everyone gets dressed up for the part. So it is. It's basically putting people in character for an evening long murder mystery dinner and game.
Are any of these other YouTubers people that you have followed or have any sort of familiarity with?
I knew of iJustine.
Yes.
But everybody else, I think, and actually a couple of the other names sounded familiar. Mm-hmm. Just because of some of the work that we do in social media at my job, in terms of the brands we work on. But for the most part, I had to look up a lot of these folks.
Just a couple of Gen Xers talking about YouTubers.
So just Escape the Night 2 is the millennials that are talking about the Gen Xers. Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. So Joey invites everybody to the house. Okay. Great. Everybody is there. And it is sort of set up like a reality show format. So we are going to be cutting to the people who are participating, doing confessionals. And this is where I kind of feel like it's getting a little muddy, because they're sort of like making wisecracks and talking about what's happening and, you know, making jokes. Whereas I feel like at least the tone of Whodunit was where you had Giles, who was the host, who knew everything, who was campy, but the tone of the contestants was all serious. Like, the tone of the players in the game, Cam, wasn't talking about, hey, oh, I hope I don't lose the game tonight, and like making fun of, like, and what's with this butler? Why is he such a weirdo? Everybody in the confessional, though, was very serious in the world of Whodunit.
Correct. Here, not necessarily so much. And even I think the tone when they're, I mean, it doesn't seem, when you see everybody interacting, for instance, in the parlor or around the dining room table, it does not come off as for the most part, it does not come off as scripted. I'm sure there are a few scripted parts from a few people. It seems like a genuine conversation, but it's as if you got a bunch of YouTubers around the table, and the rule about staying in the 1920s attitude gets thrown out the window pretty quickly. It's a bit tongue-in-cheek and casual way they're conversing with each other. So do they stay in character as their characters? Some do a little bit better than others. But for the most part, it's just kind of a fun evening of games.
Right. Like when Shane Dawson is Poison, there's talk about I want to take his wallet because he has money. And then if he dies, do I get his Twitter followers? So I do feel like that stuff to me takes you out of the murder mystery. So for me, I almost feel like that you got all these YouTube people together. Maybe if this was just people following a script, that I think it could have stayed a little bit more on the tone of what it was trying to go for, because you have this game, which we're going to talk about, but it also is, I feel like that we're a little bit all over the place in terms of how people are coming off tonally.
I'm wondering if that will change after the first episode, though, because up until the point where, again, we're giving obvious spoilers away, up until the point where Shane is dead and their means to escape from the grounds is eliminated. I don't know how much they knew about how quote unquote real this was going to feel. So I don't know when you start voting people into challenges, if the tone is going to change at all in the upcoming episodes, when people kind of suddenly see that they have to solve something or do something, or their exit from the game is going to be imminent.
Or unlike in Whodunit, where we are trying to solve, or the players are trying to solve a crime from week to week, this probably is more like in concept Kurt's Great Love, the Escape the Room, where there are puzzles that need to be solved in order to what, Kurt? What is the purpose of the puzzles in Escape the Night?
In the initial episode, we see that Shane Dawson is poisoned, and it seems like the antidote is divided into three parts. He must take these three separate doses, and there's a key for each dose. And a little bit like in Whodunit, they have to split up and go into three different areas, and each little group has a puzzle to solve to get a key to unlock the antidote. It sounds like down the road, they're going to try to be finding and assembling a collection of artifacts, and that similar puzzles may need to be solved to retrieve these artifacts from within this house. So it's very much less what were the circumstances behind an event, behind a death, and it's much more how do you solve this puzzle? It's a little bit like that part of Whodunit, though, that happened towards the middle of each episode, where it's almost like a treasure hunt where you get one clue and you have to solve it and figure out where that leads you in the house, and that takes you to another clue, and that takes you to another clue. If it's like any part of Whodunit, it's a little bit like that.
So just to set up, to get us to that point, so we had where Shane Dawson was walking around the house with, who was he with, Andrea?
No, he was with Ava, the journalist.
Okay, he was with Ava, and they were walking around the house after Joey Graceffa specifically said, hey, Shane Dawson, don't walk around the house. He did it anyway. He's a rule breaker. And yep. So he walked around the house, and then he saw the maid killing somebody or moving a dead body. Talk about the maid.
So there's two staff members, nobody nearly as cool as Giles. There's the head of staff, Arthur, who seems to really kind of be keeping everybody on track. There's Sarah, who I've just described in my notes as the creepy maid. And then there's some non-present groundskeeper named Marvin. We may have seen him locking the gates at one point. So Shane, and this is the part I think why he's the Sherry, in Whodunit, Sherry was in on the whole whodunit thing from the very beginning. She knew she was going to be the first murder. I have the feeling it was the same thing with Shane Dawson, and that part of his role was to maybe find somebody to join him and go upstairs and explore the house against Joey's rules. And as they're ascending the staircase, we kind of see in the background behind Ava and Shane, we see what looks like Sarah the maid dragging a dead body around a corner. By the time Shane and Ava turn around and see it, they definitely see like a streak of blood on the floor. I'm not sure if they saw a pair of feet being dragged around a corner. But the reason I think Shane was in on this specific part is it looked like Ava was about to go and explore, and Shane's like, no, let's not do that.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely something nefarious was happening upstairs. Then Sarah the maid comes around the corner, very creepy, with a smear of blood on her face, and directs them to go downstairs to dinner.
Yeah, I do think that Shane Dawson is in on this part of the game. I don't think that he did anything wrong, which was why his character ended up dying. And so then ultimately, they come back and Shane Dawson is leaking blood from his mouth and has a telegram which says that he's been poisoned. But there's like clues to the antidote, which, as Kurt set up, this really kicks off the segment of this episode, which is the game. But I wonder if this was, Kurt, a Kobayashi Maru situation where there was no chance that the contestants were going to be able to solve these puzzles and save Shane Dawson's life.
Yeah, because there were three different puzzles. It was actually kind of an interesting series of events because, you know, Shane did come back down and join them at dinner. And at one point, Edward, the head of staff, brings him the telegram. And while he is reading the telegram, he starts coughing up blood and spitting up blood. And everyone kind of freaks out and backs away from the table. And it turns out the telegram says, you've just been poisoned and your friends have 15 minutes to find the antidote. There's a series of puzzles in there. And like you said, there's three different keys that need to be found. One group finds their key pretty quickly, and the other two do not. One because it's a math problem that I think they all have trouble with, and the other was actually a puzzle that was very similar to one that I had done in an escape room where it seemed like they had to maneuver. If you kind of picture a box that is closed except for some holes on the side where you can put your hand in and maneuver things around from within inside the box. Inside this large box was a smaller box that they had to maneuver through kind of a maze, and it looked like it was two levels, like they had to potentially raise it up to a second level until they were able to maneuver this box to an exit, and that had a key in it. They only were able to free one of the three keys. I'm not sure if the death was inevitable. What ended up happening was, yes, Shane dies because they did not solve the puzzle in 15 minutes. And inside the coat pocket, there's this long letter that kind of sets up what the rest of the game is. It's like, you should not be looking for a killer. It wasn't one of you. The twist, the house is the killer. It's cursed. And the way to break the curse is to find these four artifacts hidden in the house. And every episode or two, it sounds like the players will have to vote two people into this challenge to retrieve an artifact. One person will, I assume, successfully retrieve the artifact, and then they said the other person will unfortunately meet their demise, and they have to retrieve a series of these artifacts to perform a ritual to get rid of the curse. If Shane had been saved, I'm guessing he could have relayed that story himself and could have continued to play. So maybe his fate as a further contestant was at the hands and, you know, literally in the hands of the other players. I'm not sure, but I could also very much see that perhaps that key was impossible to get out of the maze, or there was no way that the math problem was going to be solved. I'm not entirely sure on that, but it was a little bit like watching somebody else do an escape room.
Yeah, yeah. So, Kurt, I know you love doing the escape rooms. You know, you'll do them in all the different cities in your travels. So do you feel like the idea of watching people do escape room type puzzles is conducive to compelling television or YouTubing?
Well, there's actually a show on the Science Channel. The first season had already aired called Race to Escape, which actually was interesting, but it was a slightly different setup where they had two teams of three in two completely identical escape rooms. And there were five puzzles in each room that they had to figure out how to solve. And every time a team in the other room solved one of the five puzzles, a light bulb went off in your room. So you could see exactly how far behind you were getting. You could purchase clues and things like that. And it was actually an interesting show, but I think more because you got to see how one team was figuring something out that one other team was completely overlooking. And the clues were such that they were, you kind of got a sense of everything that was in the room, so you could potentially think ahead of the contestants and figure things out yourself. But in terms of, at least in this first episode, watching people stick their hands in a box to try to maneuver something through a maze, that's not really necessarily it's kind of like a physical element of an escape room versus a mental element of an escape room. And that was a little less compelling to watch. Just given the vast array of escape rooms that are out there and the different types of puzzles that are out there, I have hope that they're going to be getting into some challenges and puzzles that might draw in the viewers a little bit more, or at least that this head-to-head challenge where you have to vote two people in, that might be compelling. But for this first episode, I didn't really get drawn into the puzzles as much as I had hoped to, But I do have hope that I'll get drawn into more as I watch the series.
Then let's also go into this big reveal that we got about Shane Dawson and his background in hunting down the paranormal.
Yeah, there's this, was it the Society Against Evil, I think was the name of the group.
Right.
If I ever make it on Big Brother, that's going to be the name of my alliance.
Yeah, it's a little on the nose, Society well, yeah. Against Evil, but okay.
You know. There's no number in it, so that's good.
Yeah.
So apparently, like you said, the killer isn't who you think it is. It's the house itself. It's possessed by this ancient evil. And he was a member of this. His character was the Renegade. I don't know if we want to go through the different character archetypes at some point. But he came here with the intent to destroy it because he's part of this society that's been battling this evil for centuries. But yeah, there's four artifacts that are hidden away in the house. They need to be gathered together, and a ritual needs to be performed for the evil to be locked away. But you do have to vote two people in to take on some sort of dark challenge. One will, I guess, get the artifact successfully, but then the other one tragically will die. So there is a little bit of a social element where they'll be voting each other into these challenges.
To you, are you excited to see how the game is going to play out, or does the game seem like it could be overly complicated?
I wouldn't say I'm excited to see how the game's going to play out. I'm interested to see how the game plays out. Like I said, I get a sense that this first episode was just an amuse-bouche of, you know, kind of really setting up a prologue for what the rest of the contestants are now going to have to do on a weekly basis. Because in the first episode, we didn't have any sort of voting in. We didn't have any sort of really head-to-head competitions. It was a lot of cooperation, which is typically something you see when you do an escape room. So I will go into the second episode with an open mind and just kind of see, does that make the game structure a little bit more clear? Or is it a little bit more of a battle of the block sort of complication in terms of trying to explain it to an audience?
Because we do add in all these different scripted elements to it where there is a big set piece that happens where everybody goes outside because they're like, we're out of here. We're not staying in this house. And then the car, which drove them there, explodes, which is, you know, pretty big effect for this show, which I have to say, even though it's a YouTube show, I mean, has probably even better production value than Whodunit, I think, probably did. I mean, it looks really, really great. Everybody looks good. So the production value is really, really high on this.
Right. And the house is very reminiscent of Clue, I mean, to be completely honest.
Yeah. And so to me, I just feel like that much like the movie Clue, which I love, one of my favorite movies, yeah. You have all these people here who are all great. I mean, everybody in the cast, you know, is electric. They have this big following and seems like they're really fun. I just wonder if this might have been better just as a 10-part movie or web series of why not script the whole thing out, have there be a murderer. Just like in, if you go back and watch the movie Clue, do we even really even know who did anything? Like there's really, you know, there's even three endings. It's very muddy, the whole thing. There's no like going back and watching and saying like, oh, wait, watch what Wadsworth is doing there. See that's where how he's actually pulling it off. That I just think that throw that all out. And then, like, let's just have fun with these people. I feel like that now I'm, like, trying to figure out the game, and I can't follow what's happening in these games that they're playing.
I mean, you're almost describing Harper's Island to a little bit. And I'm not sure if you'd watched that when it was on CBS several summers ago. And I think there was a big discussion in the Patreon group about it, actually, last week, where it literally was, I think, a 13-episode event. And it was pretty much a standard murder mystery where every episode, at least one person amongst this 20-25 person cast was killed, and it just really it narrows down to like three people, and it does become this true 10 Little Indians sort of, you know, who could possibly have done it out of all the people who are left.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, it does have good characters, and you have a mix of, I mean, this has good characters. It has a mix of people though who are trying to take it seriously. I liked how as Shane is dying, Ollie White, the big game hunter, is like, I'm trying to figure out what's going on and what to do next. And then there's people just standing around the room still eating dinner and not really that interested. So there's some, and then I love Glozell, the jazz singer. Like there's a part where they kind of figure out, that these glasses need to be placed in these little holders on the side of the dining room to release the next clue, and the glasses get successfully placed, and the next clue, this chest just pops open, and she's like, "Back, Jesus! Oh, get out of here!" Like, she just completely loses it and just scares the hell out of her, which I thought was funny. So there's a lot of natural reactions to in here that I'm enjoying,
right?
But it is some of those confessionals, like you said, that do take me out of it.
Yeah, just you have people going in lots of different directions in terms of what they're trying to do, which I do think is, again, going back to the tone of all this. So, Kurt, tell me, how interested are you in following along to see where this Escape the Night ultimately ends up going?
I'm interested, and I believe that I will continue to watch it. In fact, I said the first episode, titled The Invitation, I believe, is free. You don't have to subscribe to YouTube Red. If you do subscribe to YouTube Red, the first month, I feel like I'm shilling for YouTube, the first month of it, the trial month is free, and then I think it's $9.99 a month. So I would be willing to get the free month's trial and then even pay $10 to watch a couple of additional episodes and see what else is on there that might potentially be interesting. So I do plan on seeing this through and seeing kind of where it goes.
Well, if they're not getting you, then they've done something terribly wrong, because you are one of the foremost Escape the Room aficionados in the entire known universe.
This show is kind of like the Venn diagram between like murder mysteries and Escape the Rooms, and specifically the movie Clue. It tickled me in a spot that I had not seen on TV in quite some time. So I was amused by it. I wasn't necessarily as put off by the shift and uneven tone as you were. So I intend to at least kind of see how it does play out.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's just that I don't understand the game. It's the same sort of thing with the quest, where we're sort of like building up this mythology, but there's a game, but I don't really understand what happens, who the winner is, or why they need to win, other than that, okay, there's a fake haunted house that they're trying to defeat. I don't really know what the stakes are if they do win, just like with the quest, like, oh, you've defeated Verlox and you're the one true hero. Okay, well, I don't understand what that entails. So I just feel like,
why can't I just stay in New York City in present day?
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
I just feel that this cast is so fun. You have all these dynamic personalities. I would like to just see them play in this world more so than get involved with trying to do puzzles and unlock safes.
Yeah, because I think we even hear from Timothy Delgado. They're trying to solve this math puzzle, and you know, they have to find like the book with the puzzle in it. And he's like, I don't think any of the people in this room have opened a book in the past, you know, 10 years. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes. I really do think that the second episode, given how the first episode ends, I think the second episode will make more clear what the actual gameplay is. Mm-hmm. At least that's what I'm hoping for.
So you can check it out on YouTube Red. Now, Kurt, I don't know if you're prepared to talk about this, but I know that there were a couple other reality shows over these last couple of weeks that you had been checking out. Are there any sort of quick hits you want to do on some of the other things you've been watching?
I really enjoyed both American Grit on Fox, hosted by John Cena. That was a fun, really well done, I thought, competition show, where it's basically you had teams of four, and each team was led by somebody from a different branch of the armed services. And it culminates, you know, somebody does get eliminated at the end of every episode, but ultimately it's a team that wins at the end. The team might be one person, the team might be all four people, depending on how that team has been kind of losing people over the course of the season. But it was very, very well done, and just a nice look into those in the lives of those the people participating. I also actually really enjoyed Strong on NBC, which was kind of a take on The Biggest Loser, but really high production value in terms of the challenges on there, where they paired up a high-level personal trainer with just kind of an average, everyday woman, and they competed together in challenges.
I didn't even hear this show. What is it, Strong?
Yeah, it was on NBC. It was really, really well done. And it wasn't focused on losing weight. It was really focused on just, you know, raising overall fitness levels. And there were challenges, for instance, where they would have to both, like, there'd be a bar that they would both hang, well, at least one person had to be hanging from, and the person would have to hang there as long as they could. Then the other person would have to jump up and hang onto the bar so the other person could drop down, because if at any point one person wasn't hanging onto the bar, then it would fly up out of their reach and they would be eliminated. Just there was a lot of great, and it had almost a American Gladiator style eliminator challenge at the end that they had to race through for time. That was pretty well done. Although I would actually give a hard pass on the Tim Tebow home free that's currently appearing on Fox.
Wow, I didn't even know about this either. Okay. Out of the loop.
It's the second season of it, which is the ridiculous thing. I watched the first
home
season
free
on
free with Tim Tebow.
Michael Holmes, I guess, is a not renowned home builder. The first season aired last year, and that was actually really well done. You had teams of two who were together as groups, renovating a house for a deserving family. The team that kind of performed the worst, the pairing of two that performed the worst, everybody else moved on to help rebuild the next house. That team stayed behind, but then that team found out that the deserving family that was getting the house was actually them. And it was a really touching show. And again, it was like 8 episodes long, and I caught them all on demand, like over a week's time. The new season with Tim Tebow, you have individuals competing for heroes in their lives. The surprise reveal, the surprise is kind of taken out of it.
Yeah.
Like everybody knows that, like, if I'm the person eliminated this episode, my hero gets this house instead of the big house at the end. Tim Tebow adds nothing to the show. So
did Tim Tebow not host the first season?
Correct. He wasn't there at all. It was just this guy, Michael Holmes, and his son. Apparently, the son was banned from the second show.
The appropriately named Michael Holmes?
Exactly. You know, every episode, I believe, in the first season was like Holmes Free and Holmes is Where the Heart Is and more terrible puns like that. But
Got rid of him and they put Tim Tebow at the proverbial quarterback position, and you're saying that the team is floundering.
Well, it's still Michael Holmes and Tim Tebow. They just swapped out Michael's son for Tim.
So when they get down in the red zone, they take out the main host and they put Tim Tebow in.
Tim's there basically to say, I know you want to quit, but look at all the, or you're afraid of failure, but look at all the times that I've been like traded from teams. Or look at all the times that I had like millions of people watch me fail. And he's there as the kind of the,
wait,
he's
but
the
he's out of the NFL.
Exactly. He's the cheerleader. Like basically it's, you know, look how unsuccessful.
He has failed.
Exactly. That's what he's saying. He's like, I kept getting up again.
Look at me now. I'm on season 2 of Holmes Free.
Yes. I'm hoping that by this simple mention of it, that the Clark curse kicks in. And it does not see a third season, because I watched the first 2 episodes and I don't know if I'm going to continue on.
What's the name of it?
Home Free.
Home Free. Okay, there you go.
There you go.
So that's with Tim Tebow. What about Coupled? Have you kept up with Coupled?
I've been loving that, actually. I forgot about Coupled. I've enjoyed the hell out of live tweeting Coupled. And the people are very responsive, the participants. I think it's a lot of fun. It's not as immature as The Bachelor. Like if one woman gets picked over another,
damning with faint praise.
Well, for instance, there's one point where there's a couples villa where the men and the women who have partnered up, they all go to the couples villa, and one guy was still choosing between the two women that he was interested in, and they all went to the couples villa, and the two girls he was with went and hugged all their former friends who were there with their men and blah, 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 and completely ignored the guy. And the guy's like, instead of choosing between the two of them, says, you know what? You guys ignored me. I'm just going to leave without picking either of you and leave the show. So, the women are usually very congratulatory of each other. They're very, the questions they ask of their potential suitors are very insightful for the most part. There's some interesting personalities, but Coupled is the highlight of my Tuesday nights.
Yeah, well, they need to get you on the payroll, Kurt. Nobody is watching Coupled doing a balmy 0.4 in the 18 to 49 demo on this past week's episode as a 1.25 million viewers checking out Coupled each week.
And I'm one of those lucky ones.
Yeah. All right. Well, Kurt, anything else that you're checking out right now?
Big Brother UK. It's just kind of its standard fare this summer. they had two houses, and now they've merged the two houses into one house, and they've just some volatile personalities, but nothing really kind of special or insightful going on there. Nothing groundbreaking. So I'm just kind of just keeping an eye on that and watching that every day.
Of course, Kurt, hopefully you have not put the Clark curse on this show like you have many of these other shows that you've watched over the years.
Well, I've mentioned probably six shows. So if it's got to go, I think I can only pick one of them.
You're diluting it.
Exactly. And hopefully it'll be Tebow.
Yeah. He has his own curse, so Tebow curse. Whatever team he goes on, that they always end up being cursed. All right, so Kurt, great to catch up a bit. Of course, you could follow Kurt on Twitter. He's at Kurt Clark. Anything else of note that you are excited about this summer?
Not that I can think of. Just looking forward to RapCon in Chicago.
RapCon on Kurt's turf in Chicago. Coming up the weekend of the 8th and 9th of July. We've still got some tickets available. If you want to get in on that, go to rahapcon.com. And we hope to see you out there at DePaul University for a day of podcast panels. And then also, we've got some bar functions coming up on that Friday night and Saturday night of that weekend. So it should be very fun. All right, looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say about Escape Night. We will embed the YouTube link, of course, on the page on robhasawebsite.com. And definitely give it a shot and tell us what you think about that. And if you got it right here in our analysis here on the podcast. All right, take care, everybody. Have fun. Bye.